Coming up, discussing some of my early impressions from this NBA season so far with Dane Moore. That's coming up right now. All right, now joining me from the Dane Moore NBA show, it's Dane Moore. Dane, how are you?
I'm good, man. We're just talking before we turn on the mics. It's like, it's here and I'm tired already. Like, that's bad. That's bad. Why am I tired already?
You've been on the road, traveling with the Timberwolves. Last night they had their home opener with the vintage courts, the vintage jerseys. It looked beautiful. So I want to start off with Minnesota before we touch on some other teams. Minnesota, one of the more interesting teams in the NBA to me this season, because the West is loaded as it is. We're seeing that happen already. The Thunder are 3-0 without Jalen Williams. Spurs are 3-0. Victor Wembanyama looks like he's taking a leap. The Warriors, Grizzlies, Clippers all look better than they were last season. Lakers, Nuggets, Rockets 0-2, but all those teams are going to be around. And Minnesota, 2 years ago, they were a 56-win team, 3-seed. Last year, a 49-win team, 6-seed. They end up in the Western Conference Finals both years, and they're 2-1 this year. But the West is just better than it has been the last 2 years, even better than it was. And now the Wolves have this weird point guard situation where Dante DiVincenzo gets named the starter right before the season. Mike Conley looks washed. Bones Highland is looking the best of the three somehow. And Rob Dillingham is out right now. So it's a very strange team in this loaded, crowded Western Conference. What are your early impressions of Minnesota? Give me some pros and give me some cons from what you've seen so far.
Yeah, well, let's focus on the point guard position first, because I think that's the newest development, the most surprising development of the season thus far. I mean, when I saw the tweet come through that Dante DiVincenzo was going to start on opening night, like, I was surprised. And asking around to some people, I was like, hey, this hasn't been the plan all along, right? And no, it wasn't. They decided, like, in the days right before the season started, to ultimately make the change to Dante DiVincenzo in the starting lineup, which worked actually really well last season when they went to it for like 2 weeks before DiVincenzo got hurt. I think there's some advantages to playing that way, but it's also, Dante isn't a true point guard, you know, and it takes him out of kind of being the elite movement shooter that he can be some, and it just ends up putting a lot more of the onus on Anthony Edwards and Julius Randle to be the point guards, which can work, but you know, it's like Houston and like some of these other teams that are playing without a traditional point guard. You know, what's the opportunity cost of that? And I think, that's going to be tested here this season.
Yeah, it's absolutely going to be. And ultimately, I was on the side of, well, hopefully Rob Dillingham is the guy that's able to take the reins.
You were, no way.
Become the guy. And now he's got a nose injury. He's out. And it looks like, it seems like Finch had put Highland ahead of him on the depth chart anyway. And the fact is, like, Conley was the guy a couple of years ago and did a great job in that role, but looks like he should have retired right now. To me, it looks like a massive hole in the team. But do you think this is partially by design to have just multiple points of creation, that this is actually what they desire? Like, is that a possibility here that this is what the Wolves want to have their roster look like, with different guys being sources of creation, Ant included?
Well, I think they would like to have Mike Conley from 2 years ago to have a traditional point guard, like smooth operator, you know, but to your point, they look at last night, like they want to play through Julius as like a hub of the offense. They want to do that a lot, even with Ant. So that's, and then Ant is a super high usage. You're going to use him in DHO, high ball screen action, isolation all the time, you know? That's just a lot of your offense. Even if Rob Dillingham was awesome right now, even if Mike Conley went back in the time machine, they would still play through Ant and Julius a lot. So I think ultimately, yeah, like, they do want to get to this. I do think it's important when they face ball pressure, you know, when Julius doesn't have a matchup that he can cook, when Ant is facing like two on the ball all the time, having somebody else to go to initiate offense. But to your point, yeah, like, this is the plan. They do want to play through Ant and Julius as kind of the two main hubs of the offense. I'm not sure they're like totally ready to handle that for 48 minutes every single night without another point guard option available.
You seem to have some skepticism about this actually working in the ways that they might imagine it working.
Yeah, I do. I mean, we don't know how and where Ant has made a leap yet. I mean, the opening night against Portland, I thought he was incredible, you know, and I did see some higher processing speeds. I did see him handle Portland's ball pressure. But it's the ultimate question at this time every year is like, where is Ant different than he was the previous season? And we've seen all these basketball developments. Obviously, last season he adds the volume 3-point shot at a 40% clip, implements that right away. But it's to me, it's always, when is that mental leap going to happen? When is he become an elite manipulator of offense? Not just like, okay, they put two on the ball on me, I'm getting off of it. I want to suck the two defenders into the right side here so Julius is fully wide open on the pop. And we've only seen two games of Ant. So I don't know. I don't know where Ant is in this process. The Portland game really screams like, hey, he might have found something else here. Get into the mid-range effectively in that sort of way. The Lakers were obsessed with just kind of loading up the gap help on him as they always do. I just don't know where Ant is on that like gradient towards becoming like a heliocentric hub of, you know, ball handling, like a Luka or something like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like with the Anthony Edwards, so much of the conversation, including when we did our first pod last year, is about his offensive evolution. Last year, it's adding the three-pointer. This year, entering training camp, it's all about, well, he's studying Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant and these guys as a back-to-the-basket post-tub. And, you know, through the three games so far, granted he barely played in the third one, he has been awesome. He has been great. It's just been interesting to see a lot of the mid-range has come on pull-ups, turnarounds. His shot distribution looks more like it did 2 years ago than it did last year. What is your assessment so far of the offensive evolution of Anthony Edwards, and what are the things that you still feel like you still need to see him prove over the course of this year?
Well, I was scared when I heard about the emphasis he was putting on the mid-range in the offseason. And not because I didn't think that needs to be something he adds to his game. You know, he does need to add that to his game, especially late in games. And this playing on the screen right now, the buzzer beater he hit in Portland to be able to create space and get to his own shot from the mid-range clean. He did that, but I was concerned about it, that he was going to totally shift his whole shot diet and become a heavy, heavy mid-range type of player, because that's kind of what he was saying to us that he was doing. And if you look at previous to this season, the first 5 years of his career, he shot 36% from mid-range and 37% from three. I mean, he has thus far in his career been one of the least efficient mid-range shooters in the entire NBA. So you hear more of that and you go, are we sure this is a good idea? You know, but the mix in which he did it, to your point, it wasn't crazy. It was the exact same like split as it was two seasons ago.
Just more efficiency.
I think that's okay. More efficiency. Yes, he needs more efficiency from 2-point range at the rim too. So I think it's just about taking the right ones. And I wouldn't have bet on him taking the right ones, you know, a couple weeks ago, but he thus far has been largely taking the right ones, and it opens up a lot for this team if he can be an efficient mid-range creator as well.
Is there any part of you that just wants the Wolves just to rip the Band-Aid off and let Ant be that, you know, ball dominant lead guard of the team, and none of this like, oh, it's Steve Vincenzo is the starting point guard? Do you like, because with Ant, the progression of his game, he did add the three. He became an elite three-point shooter last year, high-volume shooter. This year, let's just assume the mid-range improvement is for real and that this is a real thing that's going to continue over the course of the season. Let's assume that's real. Is there any reason not just to say, okay, Ant, you're going to be the guy running 35 pick-and-rolls a game. You are the lead facilitator for this team. As you go, we go. Is there any reason you think for them to do this over the course of the year? Because I'm not seeing the answers with DiVincenzo, Conley, and clearly Finch doesn't have a level of belief in Dillingham at this point. So doesn't it have to be Ant for the Wolves to get to the finals this season? Doesn't this have to be something they develop over the course of the year, Dane?
I just wonder if Finch is afraid if he gives Ant the keys, that'll never get him back. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
And I don't know, maybe that's still worth it given the poor alternative options. I mean, I think Dante DiVincenzo should play like Malik Beasley. Malik Beasley was on the Wolves like 4 or 5 years ago and was just a movement shooter in that sort of way. I think you get the most out of Dante DiVincenzo if you're using him that way. So yeah, I think the answer is yes, give him the keys. Put some guardrails on there. There's Julius Randle that you're going to want to play through a lot too. It's never, as long as Julius is healthy and playing next to him, it's never going to be like the full Luka experience of 35-40 pick and rolls, because they're going to play through Julius a lot too. But yeah, I think at this point, Ant initiating is a better move than DiVincenzo initiating or Conley initiating or Bones or Rob. You know, like I think given the options, more Ant is probably the best move, but I don't think it's Finch's preferred path of growth with him. I mean, I've been asking him about this for years, like, because Finch coached Harden in Houston, you know, of like, hey, where is this? And Finch has always told me, we'd like to keep him more as a two. We think having him, you know, the second side against the shifted defense, that's Ant's superpower, right? Where he can just rip past and go by one person rather than patting the ball at the top of the key, Luka Harden style. I don't think Ant is as good at that as some of those other guys. But again, given the alternatives, it might just have to be. They might just have to give it to him this year.
It's going to be interesting to see how this develops, because I think with Conley there before playing like, you know, still solid basketball at his advanced age before he was 38 years old at this point, there's still good reason to have Conley as, you know, your quote unquote point guard. But at this point, I do wonder, is there a move to be made, or is it just the move to something within, whether it's Dillingham becoming something or whether it's Anthony Edwards getting that opportunity? But ultimately, you know, Ant is so good and so great at so many of those other things that it does make sense to have him in that role as well, especially he also can be a very good defender. And I think he should be better than he has been so far this season. And ultimately, the Wolves as a whole, they're 27th in defensive rating so far this year. And Gobert, when he's on the floor, the Wolves have a 110 defensive rating. When he's off the floor, they have a 133.7 defensive rating. Super tiny sample sizes, of course, at this point of the year. But, you know, what can be done, Dane, about these non-Gobert minutes? Because defense was so important to Minnesota's identity over the last 2 years getting to the West Finals. What's changed now? What can be done to improve that?
Yeah, well, I would like to say that I think it's fair to state those numbers despite it being a small sample size, because that's what the splits were last season in the Rudy minutes and the Rudy off minutes, is they did not figure out how to defend with the Naz Reid and Randall and Julius Randle front court, not to the degree that they did with Cat 2 years ago. I mean, I've really grown a greater appreciation for what Cat brought defensively to that team. You look at that year when the Wolves were the number one defense, 23-24, they had like the equivalent of the number one defense with Rudy on the floor and the equivalent of the number two defense in the league with Rudy off the floor and Cat and Kyle Anderson in the front court there. Last season, it split to first with Rudy on the floor and the equivalent of 20th when Naz or Julius were at the five there. I think it's a huge issue, because it does, when you're playing that bad of defense, whenever Rudy is off the floor, it's really hard to say like defense is our identity, ball containment and rim protection and the things that came to define that really elite Wolves defense of two seasons ago, when you're toggling between being a Rudy Gobert defense and then just mediocre to below average, I think you get a little confused about who you are. That team 2 seasons ago, when they led the league in defensive rating, was not confused about who they were. So they played every defensive possession the same the whole time. I mean, it feels a little distant now, but it's what it felt like Oklahoma City, what they do, what Portland, I think, is doing thus far this season. And they're starting to feel like a far cry from that. And I just wonder, from an identity standpoint, if you start trickling towards mediocrity, what does this become?
Why is that? What is the difference? What has changed? Why does that identity feel lost that you're describing?
I think it's the interior presence, not just Rudy. Like, they were, if you, when Kat was at the four and you came into the lane and Jaden was at the three, it was, there was not space to breathe in there. And Kyle Anderson was actually really helpful there too. And he's, you know, 6'9 with like a 7'3 wingspan as well. I think Julius Randle has actually surprised me as an isolation defender and has been like better and in post situations than I expected in the year that he's been here. But he is not a strong low man presence. He does not have good instincts in rotating over to the rim effectively and kind of taking up that space or being a backup, you know, to Rudy when he's in rotation there, even if Rudy is on the floor. So this team just doesn't have as good of defensive personnel as it did before. Not to, we haven't even mentioned Nickeil Alexander-Walker being gone as well. Like, they don't have the same quality of defenders on this, in this group. So I don't know, you need, they, other guys need to step up, or they just need to shift a little bit more maybe towards being more of an offensive team. Cause I don't know. It's just, it's been really rough when Rudy hasn't been on the floor here for, through the first three games.
Yeah. I mean, look, when Naz Reid is making $13 million, it's a lot different than when he's making 25 at a 5-year, $125 million deal. I think the assessments and, you know, the things he brings and doesn't bring to the floor on under a different limelight, spotlight at this point, with what he is at this point. I still love Naz Reid. Don't get me wrong.
He's a four. But you, dude, he's a four. He's a four. Yes. And he's being forced to play the five. He's more than like a three to me than he is a five at times, you know, like. So he's being played out of position there. I don't think it's like Naz can't play good defense. You look at the best defensive rating on the team, two-man pairing for the last two seasons, it's Rudy and Naz. Rudy and Naz. Like, when Naz is at the four playing next to Rudy, it works. When you put Naz next to Julius Randle or somebody else, it doesn't. It doesn't work. So, I don't know. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, I think that's completely spot on. And ultimately, it's the identity shift that might have to happen. If Minnesota is not going to have an elite defense anymore, they are going to have to be an offensive-oriented team, which gets back to our prior topic about who's playing point guard, what is Anthony Edwards' role, Julius Randle as an offensive hub, and also things like, you know, three-point volume. This year, they're 20th in the NBA in three-point attempts per game. Do they need to increase the volume of that? Where does that come from with a bunch of iffy or average shooters on the team as well? It just, what my concern is I love some of the key guys on this team. I'm a Gobert guy. I love Ants. I love some of their role guys. I love Jalen Clark. I've loved Naz Reid a long time. I love what this team can be. I love what they've been. I just worry, if I'm a Wolves fan, that this team has been surpassed by multiple teams in the Western Conference, and that those 2 years in the Western Conference, that this isn't going to be a step up year, and instead this could be a step back year. And that's my concern, has been on paper entering the season, and it's also still my concern through three games, super or small sample size at this point. But do you think I'm in the right to feel that way, Dane? As I kind of watch this team through the lens of, like, if I'm a Wolves fan feeling that way.
Yeah, no, let me just make the counter case. I do think that's totally fair. And it's given the rest of the West and Wemby and some of those other teams, right? Like, it just is. Floated. It's denser.
There are good teams that missed the playoffs. Like, Grizzlies fans got pissed off at me last week for saying the Grizzlies are going to miss the playoffs. Well, maybe they won't, but they could, because like, a good team is going to miss the playoffs. I don't know who it's going to be, but someone good will.
I think the counter argument is Julius Randle's about to have like an all-star season, and they are so much more comfortable, man, playing with Julius right now, playing Julius Randle ball, and he's cooking like that. Yes. That great piece, Sunday, great, dude. Like, and the thing is they've just got it figured out now. Of like, and I was talking with Julius in the locker room about this after the game, about kind of making the reads based on how they're guarding him. They just put Pascal Siakam on him one-on-one to start the game last night. They weren't bringing help. They weren't bringing doubles. And Julius knows, time to cook. You know, a one-on-one advantage situation, it is so important that he does cook that. And he did. He had like 15 points in the first quarter guarded by Pascal. Then once they start bringing in a little bit of help, or they start bringing like a full-on double off the bounce when he's in the post, Julius knows how to spread off of that, right? He's become a really good playmaker. He's a really important playmaker to this team. And he talked about it like the progressions of a quarterback, of like, if this, then that, if not this, then that. I think Julius has that piece totally figured out. And I think his teammates are coming around. I was just watching last night of like kind of repositioning on the perimeter. Okay, they're now seeing here comes the gap help here, or they're rotating over a double team from the bottom. DiVincenzo knows where to rotate. Naz Reid knows where to rotate there. If Julius Randle can kill his initial matchup in a one-on-one situation and they have to start bringing help or a double team, Julius Randle will playmake and the Wolves will generate consistent good looks off of that for open threes. And that's how your three-point volume goes back up. DiVincenzo shoots 40% on volume. Ant shoots 40% on volume, playing off of Julius Randle there. If you get that from Julius, I think they will. I think they know that now. I think this offense levels up, especially if we then add in the piece of Ant, which we were talking about earlier, where we're buying the mid-range efficiency and just some overall better operation as an offensive player. I think this team could be really good offensively as Julius Randle, you know, plays 82 games of really good. It was only the last 20 of the season where they figured this out with Julius last year.
It's a great point. I mean, I think with Julius Randle, undeniably, if it is that type of, you know, we've seen him be an all-NBA player before. If he is playing at that level, it does change the complexion of what the offense can be and what this overall team could be. And ultimately, I really hope Anthony Edwards, you know, is back from the hamstring tonight against Denver, because this whole week, you know, Denver on Monday, the Lakers on Wednesday, granted Luka is likely going to be out for that game as well. And then look ahead to Saturday against the red hot Charlotte Hornets with LaMelo Ball playing at an all-star level at this point. It's a good week for kind of a barometer test for Minnesota to see where they're at. Just hopefully Anthony Edwards is healthy for that. And we'll be right back after this break. So far, they've faced the Pacers, the Lakers, and the Blazers. So I want to go through some of your observations from those teams, starting with Indiana. Indiana decimated by injuries so far this season. Andrew Nembhard out with a shoulder injury as well. They're 0-3. If I'm a Pacers fan, I'm feeling great, because I'm like, okay, we are losing games and we're going to have a lottery pick. This bye year is going to come with a reward at the end in this loaded draft class. And we still look like one of the best coach teams in basketball with these random guys, Ray J. Dennis, coming off the bench, playing minutes for us. I'd be feeling good if I'm a Pacers fan at this point.
Injury report tweets killing me. they're so crazy, banged up. I feel bad for them. I don't, but I don't, like, you think Carlisle is going to like put it into neutral? I don't think so.
No.
Like,
no,
I think he's going to still coach this team. So I don't know if they're going to get that reward at the end of the day. I don't, or somebody's going to need to sit Carlisle down and be like,
time to tank, buddy. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Mathurin out, Talen Peter, a rookie second round pick, even out, Johnny Furphy, like, a lot of guys were out in that game on Sunday.
Yeah. Which, but I do, like, to your point, like, I think it's cool how they do just play the same way. Like, I've seen the Wolves for
like
years.
Ray J. Dennis right. Went off.
He was, but doing the thing that they asked him to do, like sprint dribble into the half court, you know, like playing Indiana Pacers basketball in that sort of way. They're so deficient in, you know, what they have due to injuries. But I just think it's so important and valuable right now, looking at Indiana and Oklahoma City, of just like two coaches who got their players to buy in to playing one way, and just what the value and the power of that is. It's like, obviously we've known that in basketball for so long, but we would think about that more in the college game, right? Of like, Syracuse plays this way and they always play this way. I think in the NBA, we're understanding, like, we're seeing the power of committing to an identity and the players not being too big for it and just going out and executing it over and over. It's why the Thunder are so problematic every night. Like, they're going to play the same way consistently. And there's so many good teams around the league who don't play the same way all the time. The Wolves certainly don't play the same way all the time. So yeah, I'm very impressed by Carlisle, but I don't, they're going to have to get healthy to actually win some games.
they definitely have to get healthy if they want to win some games. If they do, we'll see there. The Lakers, Luka off to an amazing start. He's out now, finger strain and leg contusion, and then without Luka on Sunday, Austin Reeves, 51 points on 12 of 22, 6 of 10 from 3, 21 of 22 from the free throw line, 11 boards, 9 assists, 2 steals, looking like a true superstar, looking like the white SGA with all those drawn fouls. Pretty amazing to see Luka and Reeves so far this season, because if you look at the pick and roll efficiency numbers so far this season, the top 5 in efficiency among players to log at least 50 pick and rolls so far. Number 1 is Austin Reeves at 1.29 points per pick and roll, and number 2 is Luka at 1.25 points per pick and roll. They've both been amazing. You saw an amazing Luka night. Reeves amazing last night. Those guys, talk about sticking to an identity. They're just running those guys through pick and roll over and over.
So you sent me this before, and I was at the game last night, so I did not. I was at the Wolves game last night, so I did not watch this Lakers game, but I watched the highlights. And did the Kings not play any defense? Because on the highlights, you watch
talking about that, that's their identity.
DeMar DeRozan.
They're not going to play defense all year long. They're playing with 4. That's what Vivek wants.
This looked like what DeMar DeRozan wanted too, man. I was like, it was guarding really Austin Reeves, right? I mean, I don't know. I just watched the highlights. Don't get mad at me, but yeah, I think they get about 15 of those Reeves points. But no, I remember watching like a Lakers game during the preseason, and I was like, oh yeah, like there's a whole nother level in this for Reeves within the context of a team that is going to be a high volume pick and roll team. And he has it. Like he has this. This isn't going to be a flash in the pan sort of game. Like when he gets the ball in his hands and the opportunity to go, he can do it on volume. And obviously Luka can too. We know that. I mean, Luka was nuts on Saturday night. I mean, it's pick and rolls against Jaden McDaniels and Rudy Gobert. I mean, we're talking about the Wolves defense, like being a little, but he cooked every single thing the Wolves did to him. You know, in that game, they started trying to switch. They tried to put 2 on the ball. Luka has an answer for every single one of those things. I said I wanted to talk to you about Ayton because I think the one way when you have a pick and roll operator like Luka who can do everything is you end up getting to the point of putting 2 on the ball, right? Just to stop them from beating you, and then it becomes incumbent on the other guys to beat you 4-on-3 on the backside. And it's crazy to say this, but like I think DeAndre Ayton really helps there because he is a good short roller. He can hit a little 12-footer there, and he can duck all the way down to the basket. And if there's 2 on the ball and Luka at the top, like Luka's going to be able to find Ayton under the basket, and that is so different than a year ago when it was Jackson Hayes kind of lurking down the middle there. Like, I did not think I was going to like DeAndre Ayton on the Lakers, but I think it makes a ton of sense when they're trying to put 2 on the ball on Luka that now you have DeAndre as the short roll man. There's power in that for sure.
I'll tell you what. After opening night, my pod with Andrew Sharp the next morning, we kind of ripped into Ayton. I thought he had a really bad first game with the Lakers. He has been sensational in the 2 games since then. He's been great. And I think you look back in hindsight, maybe we were a little overly critical on opening night because I felt like maybe it was just a lack of chemistry. He didn't play with them in preseason that often, especially with Luka. He didn't play with him at all, if I remember correctly. So maybe it was just about, you know, working the kinks out. And then it's been great since then. He looks awesome. He's basically screening for them almost 100% of the time. You're seeing a little bit of small screens. You're seeing Vanderbilt screens sometimes for Luka or Reeves, but it's primarily Ayton, and it's looked great. So I think to your point, having a guy that A, sets solid screens, but also can, you know, give him the ball in the short roll, he can make the right decision. There's an insane amount of value in that. I think you also juxtapose against what the Lakers had last year, post AD trade for Luka, you know, it's Jackson Hayes and not much else. So it's a dramatic difference, especially with Ayton not a $30+ million guy anymore. He's a $6 million guy. And you're getting that level of production from him in this ecosystem, very pick and roll, ISO heavy, through Luka, through Reeves, and eventually through LeBron, though. You know, we'll see if there's diminishing returns there, considering how great Luka and Reeves have already been. But yeah, DeAndre Ayton, you know, gotta give him credit after ripping him last Wednesday. He's been really excellent since then. The Blazers, of course, they are caught up in the whole Chauncey Billups NBA gambling investigation right now. Billups not with the team, arrested. Right now, Tiago Splitter is the interim head coach. Another center. Tiago Splitter being a former center, current center of the Blazers, Donovan Clingan, great rookie year. He's shooting threes now. He is doing it. It's happening. Donovan Clingan has always fancied himself as a guy who will someday be able to shoot threes. And here we are, top of the key threes. He's making half of them so far this season.
This shot
looks clean. Gotta give it to him, man.
Every time, man. No, it's such a game breaker. Like, the Wolves were not expecting that in the opener, and then all of a sudden Rudy had to get out of the lane to go guard Clingan. Like, that's the value of this stuff. It isn't actually that it doesn't matter if how many of them he's making. It's that he's getting the respect that, look at Nas close out on him on that play. Like, if you have that, the lane is more open. Like, I know the opposite side of that, if Rudy Gobert has never made a three. And so when he's standing out there on the perimeter, you don't need to get out there, you know, at all. And so you have a rim protector in the middle of the lane. If Clingan can do this and create space, that opens up so much for this Portland team that, like, is a little deficient offensively. They're playing a lot of defensive personnel. They don't have, like, a playmaker who can come in and really, you know, navigate and score, I think, through everything. I mean, Shaedon Sharpe a little bit. But point being is they need space, I think, for those guys to be able to score, man. I was super impressed by Clingan.
I will say this about Rudy. It was a preseason game or exhibition, if I remember correctly. It was exhibition with France. The quote where he said, "Tonight, I feel like I lost my virginity," when he made a three-pointer during an exhibition game for Team France.
I do remember that.
We gotta see it in a real NBA game.
Still an NBA virgin. We go back.
I mean, and ultimately with Portland, though, the real story with them is they have built on they had a top 10 defense to end last season. It is still a top 10 defense. And it's been fascinating to see how much they're pressing this year, which is kind of a league-wide trend at this point. Portland leads the NBA. They are pressing on 24.1% of plays on defense. So basically a quarter of the time, you're seeing full court press past the half court from the Portland Trailblazers. And on those possessions, they're holding their opponents to a 76.2 defensive rating. Just absolutely sensational. And this is, you know, it's a Portland thing, but it's a league-wide thing, Dean, because this whole season so far, 10 teams so far are pressing on at least 5% of defensive possessions. Those are the Blazers, Raptors, Pacers, Nets, Celtics, Suns, Cavaliers, Wizards, Kings, and Knicks. Last year, there was only 6 teams. The Pacers were first in the NBA and 10.9% of the time. Then the Nets, Blazers, Raptors, Grizzlies, and Pelicans. And prior to last season, only 2 teams did it. Since 2004-05, which was the first year Synergy Stats database goes back to, only 2 teams, the 23-24 Blazers and the 20-21 Hornets, only 2. And so this is becoming a really, really interesting trend to see league-wide with teams, I think, just trying to muck up the opponent. Like, there's only so much you can do about how elite offenses are now. So just something just to muck it up. What are you seeing from these teams using the press? Why do you think it's happening? And what are the benefits of doing it that you're observing so far, Dan?
I think it's more pointed than just mucking it up. I think they're trying to take away semi-transition. Like, the take it out of the basket and go possessions, you know, where it just ends up kind of being an easy bucket on the other side because you haven't transitioned back. If you're putting that ball pressure, if you're pressing in the backcourt, they cannot just kind of sprint up into a semi-transition possession on the offensive side of the floor, or on the opposite side of the floor. And I think there's a ton of value in that. If you can sustain the stamina to be able to press the whole game, as Portland has been doing, then you can make it so that your opponent has to play in the half court a lot more. I mean, I really had my eye on it in the opener against the Blazers because the number one thing the Wolves talked about, you know, in training camp this year was wanting to play faster, right? Get out in transition, get more semi-transition kind of when hit ahead passes was a real emphasis because the Wolves were 27th in transition frequency last season. Well, they were trying, but they couldn't do it because Jeremy Grant's picking up full court and Dante DiVincenzo or Mike Conley or whoever needs to navigate simply not getting picked and getting into the half court in that way. So I think it's looking at the numbers of the efficiency of semi-transition possessions compared to half-court possessions and realizing if we could take these away, you know, there's a power in this that's going to be a less efficient offense. And the only opportunity cost there is stamina, you know, or wearing down. But I haven't watched all the Blazers games. In that first game, they were doing like line shifts where they're bringing in three, four, or five guys in at a time and bringing in Jeremy Grant to pick him up after Tamani Kamara had been doing it for 6 minutes. I think this is just smart in trying to take away an efficiency that, you know, most other teams have, but when they just are able to run it up the floor.
I remember during the 2016-17 season, I flew to Houston and did a story on the Houston Rockets. It was one of my first features I did with the Ringer back then. And I interviewed Daryl Morey. And I remember asking Daryl, what do you think is the next trend in the NBA? Like, it's all about offense now. What's the next trend? And it never made the story, but he told me on the record. So I don't, you know, feel bad saying it here. But like Daryl said, I think it's going to be the press. And a decade went by and it never happened. Wow. It didn't happen. And then in last year, it started to happen. And then the Pacers make the finals and it's really happening. And then this year, you see Portland, a quarter of their possessions, just a week. We'll see how they sustain it. Portland at 24.1, the Raptors at 17.6, the Pacers at 11.6, slightly higher than last year. And then seven other teams over 5% of their possessions. It's happening. It's actually happening at this point. And I just wonder, at this point, like you said, with Portland, the way they are inserting their lineups, how sustainable is it? Our team's going to be bought in doing this the entire year? Is this going to be something that fizzles out after a month because teams get worn out and they can't continue doing it? Or is this going to be the new thing and maybe more and more teams start doing it over the course of the year? But ultimately, I think, as you said, Dane, it's two things. It's mucking up half-court offense, but it's also taking away those semi-transition opportunities. It undoubtedly, I mean, it's both of those things. And I think for defenses to play this way, though, I think you need a lot on your roster. You need the personnel.
You got to be deep.
You need deep. You need depth. You need guys with the right personality who are bought in and don't stray from the mission. Like you said earlier with OKC, the good teams, or Indiana last year, even Indiana when they're bad. Like these teams that are sticking to an identity and playing that way, a collective buy-in. You need that too, and that's easier said than done to have. I mean, there's no guarantee over the course. The Wizards so far are pressing on 6.5% of their possessions. There's no guarantee the Wizards in the middle of January or February are still going to be playing that way. You know, like it's not right. Real.
We got to see. Yeah, we got to see what sticks. But the point being is, I think it's fair to call it a weapon if you have the personnel to be able to execute it. Like, you can't just be putting a slow guy out there to, like, because if it's just one move and now you're playing 5-on-4, you know, it needs to be a guy who's pressing who can guard in the backcourt. You know, I was thinking about while you were talking there to the whole trend point. Remember when the Wolves beat the Nuggets in Denver in 23-24, a lot was made about, you know, how Kat was like the primary on Jokic, right? And then Gobert was kind of lurking. And that's what the Wolves did to beat Denver. They also pressed Jamal Murray like the whole time with Jaden McDaniels and Nikhil Alexander-Walker. And it was, Jamal looked exhausted, you know, and it was, they were slower into the half court. They actually just started having Aaron Gordon bring the ball. And I think that it, like, there are solutions here too. Like, I don't know why the Wolves didn't set a screen in the backcourt ever that game. Like, it's pretty easy to break a press if it's a one player press. I think there's counter measures here. But if you just are trying to go up against it, it's exhausting. I do think teams will stick with it if they have the personnel to do it.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense to do. And we see trends get copied all the time. And this year it does seem to be something that we're going to see teams commit to. 24.1% of possessions for Portland. I don't know. I don't know. But they do have a lot of depth. They do have a lot of depth. And they have guys like Jrue Holiday, adding him, that love to play that style. It's probably a preferred playing style. Kumani Kamara.
Blake Wesley. Braces.
Yeah. Oh.
Hey,
he can learn.
He can do it. He's a psycho.
Oh, he is doing it. He's definitely doing it so far this year, and he's bracing it for sure. So some of these guys, you know, you might not play that way, or you know, in past stops you played at, but he definitely is embracing that culture there in Portland. It's exciting though, man. I think it's fun to me to watch those games, because as you said, like with that reference to the Minnesota Denver series, it does make things harder for the opponent ball handler. Like it's a lot easier just to, you know, tiptoe up the court with the ball, get past the half court at the 17 second mark. But when you got to get past Jrue Holiday or Tumani Kamara, woo-wee, that's going to wear you down. And so it's almost not just about mucking up the offense. It's not just about stopping early transition. It's also about wearing down the opponent's best player. And that's where the benefits can come deep into the fourth quarter. Maybe they're a tick less efficient than they would have been otherwise. So it's about these gains that kind of compound over the course of the full 48 minutes as well that can be felt. And yeah, man, like I said, 76.2 defensive rating in the possessions Portland is doing. And if you're having success doing it as well, I mean, that was more of a reward system for you to do it more, because if you show those numbers to the players, they're like, oh yeah, this is working for us. We have an elite, all-time great defensive numbers. It's like the 1960s with a 76 defensive rating. Let's keep doing it. Let's do it more. Why are we not doing it half the time?
Dante DiVincenzo had a lot to do with that number being as low as this. I mean,
that's true. That's true.
He had five turnovers in the first half of that game. So it forces teams to play a handler, you know? And I think that's interesting too. There's so many, I'm fascinated by this season with like the Houston experiment, you know, of like no point guard. There's a handful of teams that just like don't have a point guard and are trying to get away with that this year. Well, here's a counter. If you're the defense, like pick up full. The whole game and make that two guard who's being square peg round hole into being point guard really have to guard and exhaust them. I mean, I would press every single time I saw, you know, freaking Amen Thompson bringing the ball up or Dante DiVincenzo bringing the ball up. Like those teams are trying to get away with something, you know, by not playing a point guard. I would try to punish that if I was the defense. Am I wrong though? Am I wrong that you can't just set a screen in the backcourt? Like why can't the big just like delay screen right there and you're fine. It's over. Like why?
I agree.
Why it's not that complicated, right?
I agree. I think we'll probably see a bit more of that with some of these teams that might be having a hard time handling it. But then that does, you know, bring your big past the half court. He's in the back court after the screen is set, and you know then you got to wait for him to come up.
The guy who inbounded it.
Yeah.
Whoever took it out of the net just set one, and it's fine. I was driving me crazy in that first game. It's like ripped. I'm like, can we get some help? I don't know. Yeah, it was. But interesting trend, Kevin. Interesting trend.
it very, very much is an interesting trend. Then you hit it. It's like all these different teams that play different styles with, you know, more too big this year. Some teams with like with three point guards, three ball handlers, like the Spurs with Castle and Harper and Fox comes back. It's just all these dramatically different built teams. That's what makes the NBA especially so fun to watch, where every team plays their own style, have their own identity. And I very much really love that. And with Minnesota, they get their own style too. I hope it's defense. I hope it's defense. They got to bring it back. Bring it back, Dane. I hope it's defense.
I think it could be. I mean, they're going to try to make it that. I think they will be very resistant to like shifting the other direction. I mean, Finch talked about it over and over again that you have a Rudy Gobert on your team. You know, in a couple of years from now, when there's no Rudy and you got your boy Johan Berenguer running up and down the floor, like maybe that's a team that plays fast and is more offense than it is defense. Yeah. But so long as they have Rudy Gobert, they need to be They need to be like a top five defense, honestly, like that high. Maybe, I think it
maybe,
needs to be that.
Maybe they
high.
Get to find some more minutes for Berenger now. Maybe. It's just, I mean, every rookie in this class is looking amazing. Why not another one? Right?
Sure.
So why not?
He moves crazy, dude.
He does.
He is interesting. Yeah. I had an NFL scout text me, one of my friends works at, he was watching, he goes, and I thought it was really interesting because this NFL scout that's just like watching like body movement. And he was like, I have not seen players that size move like that, you know, in the NBA. And Berenger grew up playing soccer and it shows out there. I think there's a lot of mental development and physical development and stuff that he has to figure out, but they like to call him a ball of clay and they are going to be able to mold him into whatever it is that they need him to be. So yeah, Johan Berenger watch too. We'll see.
Can he play quarterback better than Carson Wentz? Probably.
Probably. Isn't there? Okay, you might make a Minnesota football reference. Isn't it weird how similar the JJ McCarthy thing is to the Rob Dillingham thing?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like the second strange. Year player, yeah. Like what's kind of going on here? Yeah, it is a bit
should be playing. I mean, he's supposed to be back week 9 against Detroit, and I mean, you guys, boy, you really need him. 3-4 in the year for a team with Super Bowl hopes. JJ McCarthy better be good.
Don't put the Vikings on me. Don't put the Vikings on me. I just live here. I just live here.
Who's your real team?
My real team is my fantasy football team, Kevin. That's who I cheer for. Too.
Yeah, I see. I completely understand. I'm very happy.
You've been moving into that.
Team is doing well. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, yeah. I dipped my toes. It's NBA cool. Season now, so we're very much NBA focused on this podcast. But I'm feeling good about my fantasy team. Feeling good about Drake May, the MVP of the NFL. Aren't we lucky as spoiled Patriots fans to have just a couple years?
Yeah, we know what your team is. Yeah,
Dane, thank you so much for joining me today, man. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, man. Anytime. Thank you for having me, too.
We'll be right back. Big thanks again to Dane Moore. Let's get to more of my observations from opening week. All right, let's start off with number one here. Dylan Harper, number 2 pick in the draft. He looks like an 8-year veteran right now at this point for San Antonio. He had 20 points, 8 assists against the Nets. This year he's averaging 16 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists on the year. And already, I mean, he looks like one of the better drivers getting to the rim of anybody in the league. The footwork, the fluidity, the ability to use either hand, the change of pace. He was an elite finisher in college. One of the best in the whole nation. One of the best we've seen in years in college. And already it's translating to the NBA. It's just hard to fathom. You know, like you got people on social media saying the Spurs have already found their new Duncan and Ginobili. Different styles of players, of course. Wemby is a one-of-one, and Dylan Harper is not exactly a carbon copy of Manu Ginobili. But those ferocious drives to the rim is something Manu once had. And already Dylan Harper looking like a guy playing at this level, just hard to fathom. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens with Fox returns, because Fox also, of course, one of the quickest players in the NBA and great at getting to the basket, great at getting into the paint. It's showing it works so far with Harper and Wemby. I can't wait to see how it works with Fox and Wemby, because if you add another guy that can also dominate in the paint from after driving from the perimeter, Spurs are going to have a bunch of guys that can handle, create, do a bunch on the floor. We'll just see if they have enough shooting. That's still my one question with San Antonio. But already Dylan Harper looks absolutely sensational. Number 2, Paolo Banchero. I'm a little bit concerned with how his year has started for Orlando. Or so far this season, Paolo Banchero is shooting 33.3% effective field goal. And everybody saw the shot he took at the end of the game against Atlanta. Just this horrible shot with 10 seconds left instead of finding a better look. But what people kind of are overlooking a little bit here, maybe because it was the weekend, was against the Bulls on Sunday. They're down 9 when Banchero gets subbed in with about 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. They lose by 12. And Banchero goes 0-for-7 down the stretch of that game. And Franz Wagner and Desmond Bane had 0 shots. 0 shots to end the game. Whereas Banchero was just chucking up bad shot after bad shot. very much looking like he did in the end of that game against Atlanta. The Magic were a popular finals pick in the East, a team that me included, a lot of people thought would take a leap this year. Well, Paolo Banchero needs to be a lot more like the guy we saw in the playoffs for the Magic than the one we've seen so far this season. And it just seems like there's a lack of chemistry with Bane and Wagner in ways that there need to be. And I believe Banchero can be better. I believe he will be better over the course of this year. But this rough start is kind of a nightmare scenario for what Magic, bullish Magic fans were expecting. He's got to be better. Gotta pass the ball, man. Like, you gotta find Franz Wagner, you gotta find Desmond Bane, or Jamal Mosley's gonna have to run it through those guys and have Banchero be the secondary guy. We'll see how that manifests over the course of the year. Number three, Giannis Antetokounmpo, so far this year averaging 36 points per game, 16 rebounds, 7 assists, looking dominant on defense as well. And he had this pass to Miles Turner for, it was a corner two because his foot was on the line, but Turner, Giannis rolling to the basket, went behind his back to Turner in the corner. And it was just, to me, a sign of what we're seeing from Giannis Antetokounmpo this year. And one of the reasons why I was so bullish on what they could be. This team around him with Turner now, a bunch of really good role players, AJ Green, Kevin Porter, Cole Anthony had a really good game off the bench. The Bucks look like a team that is playing a more modernized style simply by replacing Brook Lopez with Miles Turner and with some of their other additions as well. And as you see with the stat on screen, Giannis is the first player in NBA history to start a season with 100-plus points, 40-plus rebounds, and 15-plus assists through his first three games. He's looked like just absolute peak Giannis so far this year. For the Bucks, they're 2-1 so far this season. What they're going to have to solve are these non-Giannis minutes. They have a 123.8 offensive rating with Giannis on the floor, a 102 offensive rating with Giannis off the floor. Do they have the pieces, the personnel on this team to do it without Giannis? I think they should be better than a 102 offensive rating. I think they should with their personnel. It's just going to have to be about finding the right rotations, the right balance over the course of the entire year. Number four, Cedric Coward. If you're a listener of my podcast, especially during the pre-draft phase, you know I love Cedric Coward. I had him on the show. He's one of the best interviews I've ever done. One of the brightest, smartest, most, he's full of wisdom. I mean, for a kid his age, full of wisdom. And to see him having this early success with the Grizzlies, it's just beautiful to see. He had 27 points on 9 of 13 with 6 rebounds and 4 assists against the Pacers the other night. And he's been great in all three games. On the year, he's shooting 19 of 27, 70.4% from the field. And now, again, small sample. He's doing role player things for the most part. But in 4 years of college, he made 59.5% of his shots with a 69.7 true shooting percentage. Cedric Coward has always been an elite efficiency player, whether he's taken threes off a movement, whether he's operating off of the dribble, whether he's driving in transition, attacking out of pick and roll. Cedric Coward has always been an elite efficiency player. And the fact that it's translating already, he played 6 games last year at Washington State before he had a major shoulder injury. He didn't play in summer league. He played a little bit in preseason for the first time in 11 months. The fact that it's already looking so good, I'm surprised. I thought it would take a little bit longer for Coward, especially after all the time off. But the fact it's already working is just so cool to see. It's just so cool, and I'm rooting for him. And the diversity of his shots is really what's most encouraging. And I think the Grizzlies, I hope they expand that over the course of the year as well, put more on his plate. And to me, I think that's one of the real keys for the Grizzlies as a team. Like, Ja's running a heavier dose of pick and roll. You know, Jaren Jackson, we know who he is. They lose Desmond Bane. Who fills that secondary creation on this roster? It might be a lot to ask of Cedric Coward as a rookie, but he looks great already, and I'd like to see him get more on-ball reps as the year develops. Another player who's been great with his on-ball reps so far this season is Keyshawn George of the Washington Wizards. Keyshawn George had a solid rookie season as a rookie out of Miami. He's looking like a guy that's taking a big, big leap so far this year. Of all the young guards on the Wizards, he looks the best so far. And I want to pull up some stats here, because if you look at the top five most efficient pick and roll creators so far this year, Austin Reaves, Luka Doncic, 1 and 2 at 1.29 to 1.25 points per pick and roll. Number three, Keyshawn George, 1.23 points per pick and roll on 59 total pick and roll possessions. That's the third most of the 50 players to log the 50 most pick and roll so far this year. Keyshawn George. I mean, the other names on there, Derek White, Jamal Murray, not overly surprising, but Keyshawn George, with him doing it so far, the way in which he's operating as a player overall, cuts to the rim, post-ups, high pick and roll. There's a range in his scoring that we're seeing that looks like an overall offensive threat that can score in any type of way. Pull up threes, stopping on a dime in transition. He looks like a complete offensive talent. And again, only three games from Keyshawn George so far. Only three games for the Wizards. But this is sometimes what happens with these guys. You know, he's 21 points on opening night, 34 points against the Mavericks, only 6 points against the Hornets. So it's going to be up and down. But the fact you're seeing these highs from him, if I'm a Wizards fan, I'm feeling good that one of my guys is starting to show symptoms of being a star. And if you're a crappy team, it's going to be in the lottery again. That's what you want, right? That's exactly what you want. All right, let's move on to the next one. The Celtics, 0-3. The Pacers, 0-3. The tank race has begun. Not saying these teams are going to go winless this year, but ultimately we are seeing in the college basketball world right now, every night, these exhibition games, AJ DiBonta going off, Darren Peterson looking like one of the best guard prospects in years for Kansas, and then Cam Boozer going for the 20-20 game in Duke's most recent preseason game. We are already seeing in college basketball, these elite prospects look elite. Already in exhibition games, no issues adjusting. And in the NBA, you know, some of these teams are just going to be bad. I thought the Celtics would sneak into the playoffs through the play-in. Maybe they'll be so bad they won't even be in the play-in. Because I'll tell you what, like some of these teams in the East, Toronto's defense looks really good. I'm not sure who Boston is going to move past. Same thing with Indiana. And so we very well could see Indiana, Boston, Brooklyn as three of the locks to be in the bottom five of the Eastern Conference. And you know what? That'd be for the best for some of these teams. And ultimately, though, with the Celtics, they have had some really good offensive nights so far this season. I believe that in each game, they've had a higher offensive efficiency, a higher effective field goal percentage, I should say, than their opponent. The issue has been their rebounding, second chances for their opposing teams. And the big position was one of the main concerns for the Celtics entering the season, and it's going to be hard to see that solved. But ultimately, maybe we're seeing the beginnings already of some of these bad teams continuing to go down their route. One more thing, I want your feedback, especially on this one, because I'm having Adam Matez from the All NBA podcast. You know Adam from DNVR, one of the best NBA podcasters out there. He's coming on my pod on Thursday. We're going to talk, obviously, we're going to talk Nuggets. We're going to talk a lot else. One of the things that I want to talk to him about is the players we're most impressed by. And so whether you're listening on Spotify or watching on YouTube, let me know in the comments below, which player or team or trend has impressed you the most so far this season and why? For me, one of the things I'm really excited to talk about, LaMelo Ball. LaMelo, he's not just scoring. It feels like he's putting in better effort on defense. He looks like a more complete player. So we're definitely going to talk LaMelo on Thursday, but I want to know yours. Which player, team, or trend has impressed you the most so far this season? Let me know in the comments on Spotify, YouTube. Hit me up on social media. You know where to find me. Looking forward to having those conversations with Adam and with you guys on Thursday. Thank you so much for watching today's episode or listening on our audio platforms. We'll be back again on Thursday. Thank you to Father John Misty for the music. Thank you to Emmy and Dakota for producing us. Thanks to you for giving us a listen. Talk to you very soon.